comrades, good morning. We start. And I would once again make a request that let's switch our cellular phones off. Please, just remember to switch our cellular phones off. As always say, phone ring is going to impact on the on the recording. Didn't become silent. As soon as it's ringing, impact on the recording. So if making a request, remember to switch your cellular phone off. Secondly, today comrades were joined by our comrades from the city of Johannesburg. The Municipal Public Accounts Committee led by the Chairperson Saul Cohen. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Welcome to you and the delegation. We have to have you people from inland coming down this side. You need a passport. Well, Home Affairs is here, I'm sure. You said no trouble getting your passport. Okay. We're expecting also the comrade from Buffalo City. I'm not sure if they are lost or they are not yet here. Or I'm mixing up the date. If they're here, well, going to. Now, I hope everyone has a copy of the program. Copies of the program. refers to her. But I think the role of SADC would want officials to introduce themselves and also members of parliament, so we know who is who and who is from where. And then we'll then request for national treasure. We'll request you here in the front line, because you will be talking to us more, and the departments will, if they have anything to add or if anything is asked to them, they will then respond. But maybe there are times with introductions. But here, everyone is introducing themselves, who you are, which department you come from, and then members will introduce themselves.
Good morning and thanks, Chairperson. My name is Busani Ngaweni. I'm the DDG in the presidency today, acting for DGUBC, who is in Nigeria. They were on the process of repatriating the mortal remains of South Africans who passed away in Nigeria.
Good morning. My name is Kumuyisi Dakaisa. I'm the chief of the presidency.
Good morning. My name is Len Sulu from the presidency in finance.
Good morning. My name is Leon Wetter from the presidency.
Good morning, Chair and the honourable members. My name is Mkhuse Lapleni, the Deputy of Home Affairs.
Morning, Chair and the members. My name is George Kwarakwan, Acting Chief Director, Revenue Management in Home Affairs.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Gordon Oliver. I'm the CEO at Home Affairs.
Morning, Chair. My name is George Nigel, the PLO for the Ministry of Trade Ministry.
Good morning. My name is Omar Nigel. I'm Group Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Trade and Industry.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Shahir Khan. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Trade and Industry. And I'm also acting for Mr. Lionel Tober, the Director General, who had to attend to a family emergency this morning.
Good morning, Chair. The name is Timbeki Leplaj from PLO, Minister of Finance.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Omul Cox. I'm Chief Director for Economic Services in National Treasury.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Nyan Zilipoy, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Shad Kekana. I'm a member of this committee.
Okay, let's go back. Okay.
Good morning, Chair. Tundra Abasit, member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. Can you see the Lishville Shabala, committee member?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Amfum Akkafa, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Jonas Ramofashi, a member.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. I am A.M. Sheikh Imam, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Comrade Chamba Kuti, Chair of the committee. Right. I think, comrades, the challenge of unauthorized expenditure, as well as other elements like regular expenditure, as well as protection of expenditure, are matters that, as a committee, we sincerely would want to be kept. Well, in terms of the parliamentary process, we have to write a recommendation to the House on any unauthorized expenditure. But to do so, we always get a note from National Treasury having analyzed the authorized expenditure to advise the committee on how we should deal with it. But for us to be able to deal with it from an informed position in terms of whether we accept, reject, whether
is with money from the national fiscals or the partners who make it. We need to have this kind of engagement. We could have had National Treasury alone, but felt only correct that the affected departments should be here, so that in case members have any questions to raise, they can give clarity. But also if departments themselves have a view different from that of National Treasury, this will be in a position to argue their case, so that by the time the committee goes to sit and take its decision, we do so from an informed point. Right. Maybe let's move straight to the issues and allow the Treasury to take us through the trade and industry. But I'm hoping that comrades will recall that they were asked for additional information from National Treasury from trade and industry, which I think has been provided. Yes, I was informed that the DG has had some family issue that is needed to today, this morning. Go back home. I think if you are around and you are able to talk the issues in case of questions, I think that should be fine. Similarly with the president. Actually, the president wanted us to postpone because the DG was not going to be around. And we said no. If you were going to have an acting DG, we are confident enough to talk on the matter. Let's get this thing on the table once and for all. So we are aware and understand why some of the officials are not around. So I'll hand over to National Treasury to take us through trade and industry, and then we can check with comrades if there are questions to National Treasury and or if there are questions to the department itself, and then we can take it up from there.
Thank you, Chair. We've got an amount of 37.3 million rand that was unauthorized from the Department of Trade and Industries budget. It's going back to 2004-2005, and as you'll see if you look at the cases, the individual events actually happened much earlier. I think in some cases we're looking at things that happened in the 90s and early 2000s. So I'm going to go through them on an individual basis. Is that right, Chair? They just pull me up if I'm giving too little detail or too much, and I'll go from there. Okay. The first case is a claim against the DTI. It was because of a bilateral investment treaty. The claim states that because of some actions or inaction by the state, an investor lost money in South Africa. It was the Bumlani Lodge, and there was a court case. The court ruled against the state, and we had to make a payment. The original payment was six million rand. That was so that was paid out, and obviously there was no DTI had not made any sort of provision for that in their budget. So in all other cases we've found that we're going to go through today, it's basically a story that the department wasn't at fault. So the recommendation from the Treasury side is that there should be a direct charge from the National Revenue Fund. So I think if you just bear that in mind, that we are basically we found that the department wasn't at fault with those sort of findings. So the recommendation from Treasury is that the department wasn't at fault, so that the recommended action is the claim against the revenue fund. So in the first case, it was because of the court case was lost, and in that case, it's an amount of 6.1 million. So I carry on. Any other any questions about that matter?
No. I think just
should I go through all of them?
Through all of them.
Okay. Most of the money comes from the General Export Incentive Scheme. There are a few cases there. What happened in the scheme was that companies, it was to incentivize exports. It started in 1990. Companies would register with the department, and once they were accepted onto some sort of database, they would make exports, and once they had some sort of proof of the export, they would make a claim from the department, and they would get a subsidy for any amount they had exported. It was the controls were fairly loose in terms of the fact that there was only post. Once the expert happened, then there would be some sort of verification after it happened. It wasn't, the payments were made based on that export form that was given. And the department had the right to come and inspect the companies within 5 years after the trade happened. So, and what happened in many of these cases is that the department followed up with the companies and found that actually there was no documentation that could back up a claim that they had made. So most of these are overpayment, the department made a payment in terms of the subsidy scheme and then found that there was no documentation to back up that claim and then lodged some sort of claim against the private sector company. We've got a few different cases, so there are a few different things that happened. In some cases there was no, they could not actually trace the debtor. For instance, there was one case where the owner of the company had immigrated back to Taiwan, and so there's no way of taking forward that claim. In some cases, the company had become insolvent. In other cases, there was a court case that the companies and the department interpreted the guidelines differently, and based on the court case, the companies ended up owing the department less than they thought, or than the department thought. So there was some. It was an underpayment from the department side, or from the view of the department. So basically so I don't know if I've explained this very well, but so the department paid out money, went back and reviewed and audited with the companies, found that in some cases the companies attained more money than they should have, and then tried to get that money back. They were not always successful in that. Okay, and most of these went through a legal process as well. The state attorney was said they recommend the settlements in some cases as well, where therefore, the chances of obtaining the payment through the court, which wasn't really that high, so that it was a first settlement to come out. And that's reflected in the documents. Do I need to go through each individual case? Okay. So the first case is Cape Country Wines. There was an amount of the head raised there was 78,000.
I thought you are now moving to the next.
Oh, sorry, my mistake. Yeah. So that's an amount of 31 million. That's the majority of what you need to look at today. There's a smaller amount of 125,000 rand. That's staff debts. A lot of them are overpayments that were made, and then once staff had left the department, those were not able to be recovered. In some cases, the staff member might have died, and then there was no way to recover the amount. Either the claim couldn't be traced, or the claimant did not have sufficient assets to pay back the departments. Most of them, as I said, were overpayments, and then that money was not able to be recovered from the department. It's not a large amount. Can I move on?
Right. Yeah. And the last one is the 25,000.
Yeah, the 25,000. This was a CDMA award. The department had to pay the employee the back pay, but there was provision made for that. This 25,000 is to the unions that represented the staff member in the CSMA, and so there was no provision made for that in the department's allocation, and this money was just unauthorized expenditure. It's 25,000. It's not a large amount.
Right, and finally, your recommendation is that it must be a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund.
Yes, it's correct, yeah.
Right. Okay, comrades, any question on the explanation and the recommendation? Yeah. Yes, what was that?
Thank you, and thanks to National Treasury. Given just in a broad sense, National Treasury have come and reported about the expenditure and to some extent a bit of detail about why. But National Treasury doesn't appear to have made any effort to establish what consequences there were. For people involved in it. Let me start, please, with the question of the foreign investor. National Treasury says that DTI were not at fault, but there was a put award against them. I assume it was against DTI. So if they weren't at fault, who was at fault? Was DTI then paying on behalf of a third party? Or are you saying that the courts were wrong? Someone must have been at fault for the court to award a damages claim. And if it was the police, as is suggested here, or the courts, the justice system, surely those are the departments who should carry the expenses of DTI. Chairman, if we move on to the export incentive, I assume that these are the amounts that were written off. There's no indication, particularly I'm talking now about the large number of settlement offers accepted. There's no indication of how much the settlements were. The first one, the continent products, we wrote off 200, we want to write off 200, well, we've written off 292,000 of what amount? If it's 300,000, yeah, it's not a great settlement. This is the kind of discussion we had when we first were interviewing Mr. Chairman, and I had thought that we'd get this kind of detail back. We had asked for it, but clearly it hasn't happened. For instance, I read, if I remember correctly last time, bottom of the page, Simplicity Corporation Company had no movable assets. Well, what immovable assets did it have? It did not have immovable either. Did it have no assets? Chairman, the process of identifying these fraudulent claims was to go post-facto and do an audit. How was an audit done where the company had closed down and the director had relocated back to Taiwan? Or where the company could not be traced? How do we know that that was a fraudulent claim if we were not able to audit it? The personal debt, we asked this question last time and there's no explanation. Perhaps it's not National Treasury, it's the department who should give us an explanation as to the recovery would cause undue hardship to the debtor or his dependents. Something we asked last time and there's not yet a response. Whilst the 25,000 rand might be a small amount, does National Treasury not make any effort to, again, establish who was responsible for that unauthorized expenditure and was an attempt made to recover it? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah, my first concern is with the high number of cases where you could not recover the debt or you could not identify them or could not trace them. I'm not sure what criteria was used before we even implemented this, because I mean, for the number of people that I find that you are not able to trace, it says to me that something definitely is not right in terms of the process of procedure that we're following and identifying these people that are entitled to these incentives. That is a very serious concern for me, and I think a bulk of these things seems to come from there. And I think, like my colleague said on the other issue, I'm confused there. Because on the one hand, you're saying that we were not at fault. On the other hand, we had to pay. And I can't seem to understand that, because if we were not at fault, then why was an award made against us where we had to pay? So I'd like an explanation in terms of what is really why we had to pay if we especially not in fault. The other challenge I have is, you said at one stage that there was not enough documents after having paid the amount set to you for that. Now, I can't seem to understand that, because my understanding would be that all relevant information should be available, and based on everything, that's where you make that decision to be able to allocate or not to. But yeah, it seems like we did it the other way around, and I don't understand why that would have happened. And then it's
tells, or I think it's clear why we're sitting in the situation, because it means that we did not have the mechanisms in place to be able to see whether these people really qualified and whether they are going to be here, whether they're going to be successful, whether we are going to be able to get in. So that's a challenge for me. The other problem that I have is this, that we say that companies have got no assets into the game. I don't know what is the criteria you should use in terms of looking at the viability of these organizations and whether it is being monitored regularly, or do we only come back after we give it at the time when they've disappeared and gone and now we can't find them, or whether there should be ongoing monitoring to ensure that these companies, organizations that are entitled to these incentives are actually performing and that they are here. Let's be honest, I think for the number of people that we can't fit is a very serious concern. My challenge is, how do we go about just writing off these debts? I don't know whether, obviously this money comes from the fiscus, it comes from the
taxes. Just be a bit more direct in terms of, I want you to answer 1, 2, 3, 4, so that they don't lose track of
this too many. Yeah. Okay. You know, I find that more often that local entities, provincial entities, naturally write off debts. And I'm not sure to what extent you will have the right to just write off debts. The argument is you could not recover it. Now, some of these people I see here have entered into settlement agreements. Can you tell me, in terms of their settlement agreement, are they honoring that? Have they been paying? Have they paid? And what is the situation as far as that is concerned? Let me rest for now and give somebody else an opportunity, then I can come back to you.
I'll give him what to ask, and then we'll get a response. Otherwise,
there's too many
questions are just going to be lost in the process of
thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Chair, I just have maybe one question, and that's on general exports and industry. I really want an explanation in terms of the process that was followed before we actually even arrive at saying that a corrective action being instituted because of a verification process. How did we land in a situation whereby payments were made in a, what I'll term now, flawed process? Because that's what it comes out to me. That's how it's presented at this point in time, that it was, and I dare say, a reckless hint and the absence of due process. So it's just when I find out the process in terms of how they actually arrived at that. And say on the issue of the compensation in terms of the bilateral investment treaty, I think the department was trying to take us through that. It's fairly understood how they arrived at that. And really, it's a matter of the chicken and the egg. Situation, so that can't really be much of an issue. But on the issue of the general export, I'm not convinced that we can just willy-nilly, arrive at a conclusion in the absence of an explanation how we landed in this.
All right. Yeah, no, I'll come with you. I just wanted to make sure that these questions are not lost. Safe to say, and I'm sure the department should be more direct. I think it will assist, because this general export incentive scheme was done in the 90s, before 1994. It was meant to encourage functions busting. So I don't think that would be a thin process in itself. And I think they did explain that there was a lot of flexibility in terms of monitoring. It was only after 94 that the then Minister Trevor Manuel said, no, this thing must be investigated. Otherwise, that's what it was. I think some of the questions that you feel the department will respond to, I think they should be able to do so. I'll come back to you. I'd love you to.
Thanks,
Jimmy. If you get your chance.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Thanks for all the questions. I'm not sure about the bilateral investment treaty. It wasn't the department that was actually at fault, the Department of Trade and Industry. The finding by the court was that there was results of criminal action led to the destruction of the investment. So the state was seen to be at fault, and there was a court ruling against the state.
I'm not exactly sure why it would be NZDI, but because the DTI is in charge of the bilateral investment treaty. So I just want to be sensitive that I can't get back with a better answer than that. In terms of all the EIS scheme, we do have the data about what amount is written off, what the actual claim was, capital and interest, and then how much was recovered. In some cases, as I said, that amount is zero because we could not trace the company. And then obviously, in this case of settlements, we do have an amount, so we can send through the details of all of this, all of those transactions. I mean, I think you spoke about three continents. Let me just find it. Continent products. So they, in this case, the fund that there was, they claimed 154 million more than they should have, or than they could back up through audit, and there was a final settlement made of 25, I'm getting my thousands and really confused. They claimed 154,000 more than they should have, and the settlement was for 25,000 rand. And the state's attorney recommended assessment just because they thought that the state would not be able to recover that amount at trial. You had a question about how audits could be done if we could not face the companies, or I gave the example of the director relocated to Taiwan. I'm not sure how that would have happened. I'm not sure if the department can answer that question either, but I'm afraid I don't have an answer to you on that one. Maybe I could just give a better explanation of the GEIS and how it worked. So the department, companies would register with the department. When they carried out the export trade, they would get a form from Customs and Excise, called the DA550 form, which showed that they had exported. So they used that form. But what happened, though, is the department, when they made the payment, they retained the right to come back within the 5 years after the payment and audit the subsidy. And in many cases, what they found was, even though there had been that DA550 form submitted, there was no other audit trail to back up the trade or the export that they'd claimed. So the department had paid out the money and then tried to take it back. I think in terms of the question about, I mean, that's the process that was followed in this scheme. I think we have learned a lot from that in terms of the current schemes. The current schemes are a lot more, the department can speak to this, but they're a lot more rigorous in terms of how they implement it, and the auditing that companies have to go through before a payment is made. Nowadays, most of the auditing happens before any sort of payment. That's an obvious step. The department has signed up significantly on the standards that are needed to meet before any payment is made, but I think they can fix that a bit better than I can. I think I've answered the questions. I don't know if the department maybe wants to come in and answer some of the other ones.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe to start off, with regard to the unauthorized expenditure, what my colleague from Treasury has presented, the unauthorized expenditure for the department is not a classical case of overspending. Majority of it arose as a result of an accounting transaction where debts were written off without having the savings on the budget. So to start off on the first case with regard to the intent of the guys' debtors, as the chair pointed out, this was an old scheme that happened prior to 1994 when Minister Trevor Manuel took office in 1994. He requested that an audit be done on all of the claims that were paid. And what he found was when the inspectors went out, was a lot of the claims from the applicants could not be substantiated with valid documents. And the decision taken by the department at that stage was to raise debtors for all of them. We engaged the applicants at that stage together with state attorney the state attorney recommended at that stage that we at least settle where possible, because if we go through the court process, it will be very difficult for the department to succeed. And I think what's important is, and I think when Treasury, through the review of the processes and through the each of the instructionals, the right of debt over a period of time has become very onerous. You cannot just write off a debt without following due process. There's a number of steps that have to be taken before any debt of the state is written off. You have to investigate it, you have to follow up. And what we try to do in the letter we sent to the committee is indicate the steps that was taken before any debt is written off. So a letter will be notified in writing and is given 30 days to pay. And if no payment is received, the state attorney is instructed to take legal action. The debtor will either make a settlement or pay, or if it doesn't pay, the state attorney will recommend whether to proceed to take further action. So in all these cases with guy debtors, it was on advice of the state attorney that the department settles with these applicants and move forward. But in terms of the process moving forward,
Let's see the process moving forward. This part we're dealing with, this is how it was processed. Okay. Commitment?
No, thank you, Chairman.
He raises his best, I'm coming to you.
Yeah. It can't be like that. The Chair doesn't respect that.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying, Chairperson, in terms of my question, I was really trying to get that. How would you stop the recurring problem so that it doesn't come back again and we don't have to go back into the situation that we've confronted? National Treasury have tried to explain that, sir. Thank you, John.
Okay. Comrade Blissfield, Shabalal, and yes, we'll come back to you, but
thank you, Shabalal. I think partly it was answered by the gentleman from Treasury, but the other amounts that are big, like the Nestle SA one, I was just intrigued that when people settle out of court normally, there is a party that feels that I'm not going to win the case. They choose to settle. Now, in this instance, who was that party? Was it BTI? Because if it was BTI, then whatever amount was settled, it's going to be far less than the amount that was originally supposed to be recovered. So I'm interested in those figures. What was originally supposed to be recovered and what was recovered through settlement? And maybe I could turn it blind eye to smaller companies, but I mean, Nestle SA, that's a multinational company. If they owe 10 million, they must be 10 million. So I would want to understand the rationale of settling with them. I guess my other question is...
Before you move on, did you say that you have the documentation that would indicate what was originally claimed and what was finally settled? Can we have copies of that? Well, even if not now, but say before the end of the week, so we could distribute them to members. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. My second one is just a concern. If this debt goes before 94, there are two issues. It's almost unfederal DTI responsible, but on the other hand, I think then I have a question to ask. If we inherited the debt, why weren't they dealt with initially? And 20 years down the line, why are we still dealing with debts that came before 94? Does that on its own, for me, maybe the department can answer for itself, not if it indicates maladministration that it's been recurring for the last 20 years? And now in 2014, it's very good to say, but in all fairness, they are just administering this thing came before 1994. So I'm just caught up with it. Thank you, Sir President.
Much. Lastly, Honorable Lev.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the explanations, but it's more confusing. Blue Continent products, 292. Thousand is written off against 154,000 debt. I think some of the figures are wrong. And then there's a chair. Perhaps the report the chair is talking about when you offer it will clarify that. So please, if we could. There was no explanation given on the recovery would cause undue hardship to the debtor or its dependents. And I think the department needs to answer that in due course. Mr. Chairman, both responses dealt with pre-1994, and one understands the need to audit something that was created under an illegal regime, and so that's fine. But Mr. Chairman, this amount appeared in the 2004 and 5 annual report, as I understand it. That is nearly 9 years ago. You can't blame pre-94 for that delay. And it would indicate to me that this incentive carried on after 1994. It wasn't stopped in 1994. Otherwise, you've got to explain why it took 10 years for it to get action by the department, and consequently people have gone back to Taiwan and disappeared, sold their assets, and hidden the money. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Right. On the last part, my course the department will answer for itself. My understanding is that the unauthorized expenditure was discovered immediately after 1994 when the then minister ordered an audit, and then you have processes of seeking to get settlement. And I think if you look at the note from National Treasury, the first one came to the committee in 2010. So that we're processing it today would to some extent be a result of the delays on our side in Parliament to have the process. But what we're dealing with is what was audited immediately after 1994 and relates to transactions up to that point. Beyond that point, we still have to get any figures if there are any. But I see the department is eager to talk to it. Yeah, so.
Thank you. Chair, just in terms of the debt amount that was raised and the settlement amount, it is in the schedules provided to the committee and to the members. For example, the Blue Continent products. The original debt was 144,000 rand. Okay. The settlement that they offered and which was accepted by the state attorney and the DTI was 25,000 rand. The amount that was written off, 292,000 rand, reflects interest on the original debt that was written.
We don't have that schedule, or at least I don't have it. But it's fine. Can you make it available? And we'll give it to
so we can just in terms of the hardship, the comments regarding the hardship, in terms of the treasury regulations, an accounting officer can consider a write-off of a debt if the recovery would cause undue hardship to the debtor or his dependents. So at when that debt was considered to be written off, the department of assets applied Section 11.4.1 of the Treasury Regulation.
I think what the members want to know, what does that mean? Is it will cause a hardship? In this particular instance, or any other hypothetical instance?
Chair, that case was a low level staff member. If I'm not mistaken, it was a driver. The department took into account the salary that the person was earning, what he takes home every month, and the debt that rose at that stage. And I think after considering all factors, it was decided that due to undue hardship, the department will write off that debt.
All right, that's the explanation. Whether it's fit or feature, that's something else, but that's the conceptual of that statement. And I think I want us to wrap this one. I see the question. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted, in terms of the interest of 292,000, in my understanding, in terms of law, there's an induplin law that come in where the interest cannot be more than the capital amount. So if the capital amount was 35, it cannot come to 292,000. That is the first one. But the second one, very quickly, I wanted to know. All these people that have been directors and whatever these companies, have we got process now to check whether any of these people, especially where we've written off or settled, are in any way benefiting in one way or the other at this point in time in terms of doing business or whatever it is in Balakar? That's what I want to know if you have a problem with the double in terms of the Ali, whether directly or indirectly they are benefiting all these people through whom they have basically lost a lot of money. Thank you.
Can I respond to that? I think the department should respond to that.
Chair, it was a settlement at that stage. I mean, the entities can apply for basically the department after the settlement cannot take any further action. But we have improved the process of verifying the investment pre-orders before any claim is paid. So this idea will not happen in the current DCI control environment. But with regard to these entities, I mean, we will support any investment that will add growth to the economy. So we continuously monitor it.
I think this question is more around these companies. Are they yield listed or listed? Do you have an idea whether they are still in business? No, I want them to. Yeah.
Chair, maybe if I could answer that question. In fact, we went back and we did a check on most of these companies, except for companies like Nestle. Most of these companies are not in business. If they were in business, we would have gone ahead and tried to recover where they said that they couldn't trace these companies. But where company settlement has been agreed to with a company, you cannot take any further action against those companies. If they make an application for further incentives to either create employment or efforts, you have to consider that on that basis because you've already reached a settlement.
All right. Now that's fine. I think the attached list which I now have will share it with members. And it will assist us when we seek to take a decision. I want us to move to the next item, but only after Les has asked his last question.
Chairman, you correctly asked the question of National Treasury about their recommendation. We had a verbal recommendation that had come out of the National Fund, for want of another correct terminology. Will we get that in writing?
The recommendation from National Treasury. I think it is last paragraph. The recommendation from National Treasury is that this must be a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. That is what they are recommending after all the explanations and the analysis. But we're not saying we agree with National Treasury or we don't here today. We'll have them. We'll still meet and make our decision. We just want to get clarity and information. Can we move to the second one, the President? Before you do so, I want to welcome our comrades from Buffalo City, who finally arrived, led by their chairperson, new councillor, Madonna. I hope I have it right. Finally, Madonna. Ubi? There she is. Thank you. Thank you, comrades. Welcome. Welcome. I see. Okay. Mr. Chair, can we go to the presidency?
I'm not qualified to take it to the presidency. I think we're really trying to find the relevant official. Hopefully she'll be here within the next few minutes. I know she is in Cape Town and she should, it's just a question of finding her within the building.
Chairperson, sorry about this. Unless she was working according to the schedule, she is in the offices. My manager just went out to give her a call, so you better be here now. I know they've got a problem on lifting 130 Bank Street, just to get out of the building. So, sorry.
And Home Office, same official.
Same official was involved from the field.
You said the meeting started at 9, so 9 o'clock we expect everyone to be here. Otherwise, Home Affairs would have come here at 7:30.
Chair,
but I'm not happy about the response from the Treasury. I think we are not saying the Treasury should respond on behalf of the President. All what we are saying from the Treasury is they need to give us, that is, at least a rationale behind the recommendation on the Treasury. Treasury is there, they will respond for themselves.
No, I think what he's saying is that the official relevant to the finances of the President and Home Affairs is in the office. She was supposed to be here.
All right, can we host? Is she anywhere nearby?
Yes, sir.
I've just called them. They are all there away.
All right. Yes, Comrade, but I want us to take maybe a 2 minutes break.
Yes.
Until they arrive. Yes, Comrade. No, wait. I'm not saying leave. I'm saying...
Thanks,
okay, that's fine. Just a few minute break, and then when it's around, we can then proceed.
From the 18th,
yeah. 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 Yeah.
So we will hand over to National Treasury to take us through the unauthorized expenditure of the proceeds. We do have the notes that were sent to us. Just take us through the various expenditures, your recommendation, and then we'll take it up from there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Gillian Watson. I'm responsible for the budget.
Just bring the mic closer to you, or come closer to you.
Yeah. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Gillian Wolfen. I'm responsible for the budget of the presidency. I'm the budget analyst for the presidency. My colleague is Mr. Ike Mabena. He's assisting me with the department. He's also one of the senior budget analysts. I prepared a presentation explaining unauthorized expenditure according to the PMA. I'm not sure numbers go through that one. No. I'll just go
straight into the unauthorized expenditure of the president.
We've received a letter from the presidency after the annual report informing us of the unauthorized expenditure. And we received that letter in April, in July 2010. National Treasury sent a letter to the president responding to the request to authorize the unauthorized expenditure on the 14th of May 2012. And we made specific recommendations regarding that. I think our recommendation, to be upfront about it, was that the unauthorized expenditure must be a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. After the assessment of the unauthorized expenditure, the detail of it, we came to the conclusion that the expenditure was considered as an essential expenditure, and the main part is the traveling cost of the president. Also, as part of the recommendation, we said that we would consider using the rollover funds of unspent funds of other departments to roll over to basically fund this unauthorized expenditure. We could not do that because the decision of the committee was not final yet. So there was no condonement from the committee side. Just to give the details of the unauthorized expenditure, it has compensation of employees of 8.1 million, goods and services of 20 million, and then transfers to households about 200,000, and then payments to municipalities of 3,000. The payments to households is payments for gratuities, and the payments to municipalities is payment of car licenses. And I would like the department to give more details around the unauthorized expenditure, because I think they've got the detailed information. So our recommendation is that the activities that lead to unauthorized expenditure were of uncontrollable nature. We recommend that the unauthorized expenditure to be approved with the additional funding for the deficiency.
Right, I think that was very telegraphic. I'm sure the questions that are going to come will be more about details. My assumption was that when the president wrote to you, they provided all those details. I see the goods and services is mainly traveling with the president, compensation of employees, gratuity payments, to municipalities, which is what is that amount? Is it 3,000? 3,000. Okay. All right.
Thank you,
sir. And then come back. Then I'll come back to you. See that they had not heard away from the first.
Chair. Chair, as I understand it, the parts that come before this committee at this time to request our assistance in approval of their overexpenditure and to provide good reasons for that overexpenditure and to clear themselves of any wrongdoing. Therefore, Chair, I've got to say that I find it frankly insulting that the Department of the Presidency, the Ministry of the Presidency, comes to this forum and presents us with a two-page document asking for 28 million rand. The lack of detail, Chair, is frankly...
No, let's read this way. I think the presentation is of National Treasure.
Yes, I know. Chair, if I
may... No. But you say the President, I'm saying the presentation is from National Treasure. The reason the President is here is to be able to give further details in case one. So when I gave you a platform, I thought you were going to ask a question that would give clarity or ask for further detailed information.
Chair, it was a short preamble to my question.
Well,
if I may continue, Chair.
Okay, I may continue. Sure.
Thank you, Chair. Well, my question is very simply, will President please give us full details on the expenditure relating to employees? Will they give us reasons as to why the expected additional budgeting employee was not anticipated and not put in the budget? And can I please give us a full explanation on how, what goods and services were extended at the rate of 19 odd million rand, 20 million rand, and not just give us one line item for goods and services and expect this committee just to approve? Thank you, Chair.
Fine, that's it. That's what I wanted from you. They're here so that they can give that detailed information.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is the same as the question of the latter speaker. Can they give explanation because these references are really not here. Thanks.
Can I make an assumption that maybe let's give the presidency to just get into the details of each of their authorized expense? Because I think we all. Can you give better detail? Yeah.
Can I suggest that maybe when you deal with other departments, you do the same thing? Because if the Treasury has reported, I think the other department has reported as well before we come in as a question.
I'm sure you would have noted the first presentation from National Treasury was quite detailed compared to this one. Should we give them or do we have questions?
No, I agree with your question. At least my preliminary statement won't be like the other one. No, but you see, they talk about rollover, they talk about recovery from the 2012-2020 appropriation to the present vote. So for me, what is it exactly that they are saying that it should be done as a solution to the particular problem? Are they going to recover it from the rollover or are they going to recover it? In which I'm not sure what Treasury is exactly saying in their own recommendations. So for me, it was a direct charge. Treasury is leaving me hanging. And you see, the explanation, as I said, uncontrollable. You see, I mean, you can't say that about the fish cash. This is money of the people. Tell us what do you mean by being uncontrollable. I mean, Treasury is the most trusted institution in this country. You can't tell us that. Uncontrollable. What type of explanation? Give us at least something of a substance. What are the reasons that made this type of expenditure?
Okay. Comments. Why don't we do this? I think the part of the recommendation, let's deal with it last. Let's first get to the explanation of the individual amount. And then I think we can then ask questions from a much informed position. Because she gave a general sense that on this one, this was the case, this one. But then let's get more details, then we can then come back to questions. Is that okay? Yeah.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Just to begin with this, it's important, Honorable Chair, to emphasize that, you know, we are having a very complex and complicated machinery in the presidency. And changes do okay. We say that we at least plan our program for about 80% of the time, and is 20% which in fact is influenced by events outside of the presence and even outside of the country. that as members will see the first amount being referred to here happened during the transition year of the fourth administration. And with regards to compensation, as members will recall, there was a creation of new ministries in the presidency during this period. The colleagues I have with me from finance and the CFO, they will not have foreseen that there would have been a political decision to have an additional ministry in the presidency, including the National Planning Commission. It was a decision that has taken political. So the reality is that there was additional, minister and deputy minister in the presidency, and as the administration, then had to make provision to take care of that. And as members are aware, as soon as there was that addition, support staff had to be employed as well to support the additional departments in the presidency. And members might recall there was also the establishment of the contact center or the call center during that transition period. So most of the costs are associated with that, honorable chair. To the extent that the salaries are concerned, or the personal cost, compensation cost. With regards to goods and services, and I'll make an example to illustrate a point here, that whilst as an official in the presidency, we're in this committee today, there is a cabinet meeting that is taking place. The president has a responsibility to serve the country as well as the continent at the G20, so he's in Australia. And today the deputy president is in Zambia attending the funeral of a former head of state. So we ordinarily, when we run a complex operation like this one, it means cost will be incurred by officials who must support the running of the cabinet system.
The DG is in Nigeria.
The DG is in Nigeria, together with Minister Hadebe to assist with the repatriation of the mortal remains. And so this is how complex it is. It is taxing on the budgets of the presidency. It is maintaining the Pretoria, Cape Town, especially because we are in the cabinet system. We are the backbone of the back office of the cabinet system. And when changes do okay, I mean, what we have now is that parliament and committees end. Most of the business of the parliament will end next week. But if it does happen that there is a sitting in the last week of November or in the first week of November, it means of December, it means we might change cabinet to come meet in Cape Town. We'll incur costs for that. By and large, we do plan for on the basis of the program that we receive from parliament, but if there are changes, we have an impact on our budget. And importantly, Chair, we have had an extraordinary situation during the 2011, where we also incurred unauthorized expenditure, and that the country was involved, or at least the president in Libya. We also got involved later in the Central African Republic. And also, as members will recall, that when in 2009, South Africa was not a member of BRICS. Subsequently, South Africa becomes a member of BRICS, and that comes with responsibilities because the CFO here needs to make sure that as South Africa becomes a member of BRICS, that the president must travel to BRICS, and also that we will need to spend resources hosting BRICS here in South Africa. As it stands now, 2 months ago, we never planned or made provision for our mediation in Lesotho. As it is now, we are incurring costs because SADC, and not just President or Cabinet, SADC have made a resolution that South Africa must have a mediator who is the deputy president who need to go to Lesotho. So we are incurring costs because these are decisions that are taken, and we've got to meet those obligations as this country as well as the presidency in particular. So without going to specific cost of how much each ship will cost, I'm just giving an indication, Honorable Chair.
that there were additional ministers in the presidency in 2009, 2010, and they had to incur additional costs because of mediation in Libya, Central African Republic, and elsewhere. We also had to incur costs over and above what we requested. And finally, we did go to Treasury to make it a request when we anticipated that we were the challenge of the budget. And then
let's deal with the last two, transfer to households and municipalities. Let's go through them.
Transfers to households and municipalities, as it was explained, that these are gratuities that are given to staff because we run the household. So this has got nothing to do with the expenditure of running the households, themselves. So if it happens that an employee, passes away, or an employee who's been working, say, for 20 years, there will be a small gratuity that should be given to an employee. Well, people who should be given watches before now, for long service. So if those amounts that are given to for long service or employees who might have passed on, and this is not the budget to run the households at all. And transfers to municipalities, as I explained, these are vehicle licenses. I do recall there was a time at which most of the government cars have a number plate ends with G. At some point, because those cars in some of the areas in Gauteng were being targeted, it would change the license plate to be GP because then they wouldn't know that that's a state car. And it's a reality, it does happen in other provinces where you will remove a government number plate because people think it's government and then they will target those. That's why we then have those vehicle license speed and also to register new vehicles as new vehicles are taken on board.
Yeah. Right, so you then go to National Treasury and you can go to that part now.
Yes, sir. The road to National Treasury, the person, we are obliged to do so by the BFMA. Each time when there is problems like these ones, we've got to write to National Treasury. These reports first, before we even write to National Treasury, they are presented to top management for consideration, and then write to National Treasury first to notice them and also to try and correct the situation. So we wrote in 2010 as well as in subsequent years. We wanted the discussions, Honorable Chair, with National Treasury over the years. They impressed upon us that we need to try and save a bit more. And you see, Honorable Chair, that beyond 2011, we were able to manage these problems because we increased our capacity and ability to say the system had suffered from the changes that occurred in 2009, 2010, we were able to predict things better. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. I suppose we now can ask questions. Comrade Kekane, Comrade Lishbills, Shabalala, and then they'll respond, then I'll come to Les, and then Lewa. I'll come to your conference. We'll all get the opportunity to ask.
No, yes. Thanks. We appreciate the good work that you are doing. But you see, my biggest problem here would be to engage that is with this report without information. Because I hear what acting PG is saying. I want to make a proposal that if possible, the department should at least provide us with detailed written information so that we can engage that is on the board. Because he said quite a number of issues. And my biggest problem is we might engage on the report with our own assumptions, whether correctly or incorrectly. And I don't think that will assist us in arriving at a correct decision.
I think maybe let's approach it this way. I think the same way with the annexer from TGI, because what they are giving us verbally is what has transpired. Now, the details will merely confirm or otherwise what they say. So, yes, can we be able to get some details on this aspect? Some further breakdown on this affair. This is coming at the 1, 2, 3, 4, this 4 cases. All right. So before we take a decision, we'll have them and we'll also be able to also get complete.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm partly covered. I think, like I asked the former department, if you can get the breakdown you're talking about. But also, if they could clarify maybe because when you sit as a committee, they will be gone. Various examples were given as to why the second figure of 19 million goods and services, and the examples that were given to me, I think I would have understood if it fell under travel and subsistence, because those are travel examples. I'm not sure if they fall under goods and services. It's like the gratuity figure of 279 million. I don't know, again. It's of 279,000.
Yeah.
That money, isn't it part of what you budget for? I mean, if you have an employee that's retiring, it's part of money that comes from HR, it's budgeted for. It cannot be an uncontrollable expenditure. I don't just suddenly take 65 years for government and retire. I mean, I don't know how to even explain it.
You can suddenly die.
You can suddenly die, but you don't suddenly get 60 and retire. So are the car licenses. I'm not sure car licenses amounting up to 3 million. Did we buy a fleet for 3,000? Did we buy a fleet again? How is it uncontrollable? Did we not know that we are going to purchase cars? Because I don't think we also just up and buy. You know, it's something that you budget for and plan for. So I think the detail that they are going to provide will help us a lot to understand where they are coming from.
All right. Let's say, I think everyone will ask before they respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will get to the recommendations. I'm not going to deal with that now.
Sure.
That's fine. Mr. Chairman, I'm happy that we get the detail, but I really do need to emphasize that we need the detail. The DDG has given us a long talk about events that happened long after 2010 even. Had nothing at all to do with this unauthorized expenditure. And so it is somewhat disappointing that we the areas are being fudged rather than dealing with what we're here for today. And so, Mr. Chairman, please, the detail must be of this unauthorized expenditure, and may we please get the service providers, the amounts, and so on, for so we can see how this money was spent, including the gratuities. I cannot understand why 3,000 Rand would be an unauthorized expenditure on licenses, whether you change the registration from EG to EP to NKR or whatever. It's astounding that's unauthorized. Then, Mr. Chairman, the whole question of transition. When we went through that transition in 2009, we went into an adjustment budget in later in that year, and we went through a long process of adjusting budgets to take into account that transition. And National Treasury must help me here. If that was the case, why would we then have any unauthorized expenditure if we adjusted for those changes in departments and so on? So, I was sitting on the Finance Committee in that year and the Appropriations Committee. So the whole motivation, we'll get the detail, but I don't understand what went wrong in that adjustments budget process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. What?
Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm very comrade Kuno.
I'm very sorry that a broken record, because everybody said this. Quite frankly, we need the detail. We need that detail.
Okay.
I appreciate that, you know, the acting DG and his explanations, but like Honorable Arthur said, that CAR has got nothing to do with 2020. So quite frankly, it's very difficult to even engage on this. But the issue, Chair, is the management of the transition. We all know South Africa is a very stable democracy, and every 5 years we're going to go to elections, and there's bound to be some sort of, and we definitely knew that in 2009 was going to happen, in 2008 to clearly preempt that, but let's put that aside. So I see no reason why the forward planning really could not account, you know, factor for the changes that are going to be there.
I mean, 2019, there's going to be a transition that should be planned for. So they should then come back and say, oh no, we just, well, you know, there were changes. For me, that's very irresponsible. And I think that is something that we need to look into. The second issue, Chair, which I think we need to apply our minds to as well, is that, as Honourable Officer said, as I wanted to go to that, is that there were budget adjustments. That is true. I think the absence of the portfolio committee dealing with the issues of the presidency in part does land us in this problem. Because we now, you know, it's operating in some sort of vacuum. And the changes and adjustments that need to be done will cause a problem. So I really think we need to apply our minds to that. But, Chair, I would really plead that the DG, the acting DG, has given us an explanation of events after what we're talking about. Could he zoom into the year in which, you know, we are speaking about? The final chapter, I really needed a better explanation on the issue of compensation of staff, because the acting DG spoke about new staff. I'm trying to find the nexus between the two. He's speaking about compensation, but he spoke to us about support staff, additional staff, the departments and new ministers. I'm trying to then bridge where the compensation and new staff. You don't compensate you for saying you've got a job now and you're going to compensate you. So can you please get clearer answers?
Okay. All right. No, that's fine. I think the issue of the tradition and the staff complaints, they are less of administrative processes, they are more of political processes that you can't anticipate. You won't know what the cabinet is going to look like and therefore prepare for it. But I'm sure they'll talk to that.
Thank you, Chair, for explaining. And thanks to the summarized explanation, I was hoping that we'll get more explanation and more details in the explanation. For instance, transfers to households and municipalities, they still don't make sense. When you listen to the explanation from the acting DG, it says that we are poor planners. Things does happen, you know, somebody thinks somewhere that, you know, today I must go to Libya and it has to happen. And I don't think it's the case. So I'm just looking when he proves or when he, you know, the details that we've been asking for is going to tell us exactly what went wrong where. You know, with the mediation processes, one can understand that you don't anticipate that there will be problems in Lesotho and, you know, and so forth and so forth. But if the president, your explanation about BRICS, that BRICS was not, we had members of BRICS, but the president, after we became members of BRICS, has to cover. It means that there is no budget. You know, we are not budgeting. We are not planning for what we want to be doing. So I'm just hoping that when you bring that explanation, or if you have it right now, I think it's going to help us a lot, because now it's really troubling. It's really giving more, you know, questions than answers. But when you talk about compensation, my question is the same as Chang's question. How do you compensate? If it's a new transition, new members, support staff are going to be there, why do you have to compensate them when they are waiting? I mean, they have to get salary. So I think we need to have more explanations there. Thanks.
All right. I think that all these agendas people are not here. But I think if we look at, you know, the annual report, I think monthly payment and compensation tend to be used interchangeably. So whilst in everyday English it may appear as if we're paying off people, but in a company it's a salary. Yes. Comrade, and then you, comrade.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
I don't want them to look straight
at the question. Let me start off by the reasons given in terms of the adjustment budget, and I would understand Treasury were part and parcel of that. And in light of the fact that you also say certain things are unforeseeable, that Cabinet suddenly makes decisions, it's really a conflict, but to be that it may, those are certain things that we can actually accept. My concern is, in terms of unauthorized expenditure, which seems to be a norm year in, year out, because I mean you can see every year it's exactly the same thing. that is happening. It is not necessarily the planning. Over and above that, there will be unforeseen circumstances. Is it not perhaps poor planning that we are running into this trouble? Then the other issue I have is, for the unauthorized expenditure, had there ever been anyone responsible? Because I would understand that unauthorized expenditure, any official responsible should be taken to task and should be accountable. And if for any reason there were any criminal activities, then again there needs to be consequences for that as well. Has that actually happened? But finally, what I want to know, since it's a norm every year, what mechanisms are we now going to put in place to try and avoid this in the future? So that we don't continuously get this, barring of course the fact that there will be unforeseeable things, which we can understand, that is going to happen from time to time. But the last thing is this, that in terms of the report that you're going to give us, my understanding is, and I hope I'm correct, that when you say 19 million, you're going to give us an entire breakdown of how we come to the 19 million, so we'll be able to identify those that are recurring that should really not be there, which you can avoid. So we'll only stick to then those that are unforeseeable, but the rest of it should be removed from there. It should not happen again, and I think that will take us forward. Thank you.
All right. Come with what?
The honorable members. Have represented some of my concerns. You see, from Treasury, the problem is that this is 20 years of our democracy. And you can't say to us in 20 years, in the democratic system that we've created, this problem can't have a system created that would make us comfortable that this type of trend of expenditures are going to be controllable. You're opening us up to the effect of saying that how the fiscal being used should be concerned. Well, you can't say to us that in 20 years we wouldn't have known that people should be created. And the hard system, even Treasury in itself, put into place. Because definitely, so when you go to elections, we all know that it's going to be a transition. But the president is not transition. There's a president that has been there for quite a long time. So what type of systems are we talking about that are going to be in place so that the problem doesn't care? Or that Treasury, or is it running short in PFMA, and how would want you to pin down and be able to give us a sense of how this expenditure can become controllable and be accounted for in a manner that would make all of us happy, so that we don't come back and say after some time, you know, this problem is an uncontrollable problem. For us, what is important and is that it does go back to individuals that are responsible in the department. What systems are in place to be able to solve this particular problem? It's only what that I expect Treasury to talk to and be able to give us guidance and not be impatient with us, honorable lady, to be impatient with us. Because if you are going to do that, we will be definitely impatient with you also. We hope you to be able to let us understand what is going on.
All right. The last question, and then we can then get responses.
Thank you, Chair. I have three specific questions, no general statements. The first question is, in terms of the new ministry, the new call centre, etc., etc., in terms of the timeline, what I'd like you to come back to us with is, when exactly was the decision on the new ministry made, the call centre made? Was it before or after the budget adjustment process or any budget vote process that happened at the beginning of the fourth parliament? Okay? That's the first question. The second question is, in terms of the gratuities that were paid out of the household expenses, exactly how many gratuities were paid, to whom, and how much? Or was it one gratuity of 279,000 rand? Because that sounds more like a pension payout. Okay? And then finally, in terms of the vehicle registrations, in my knowledge, that would account normally for around about 2 to 3 vehicles maximum. My question then is, if the changing of the number plates was essential due to security risks, why not change the entire fleet? I'm assuming, so the question I want to know, was it just one or two vehicles that was problematic, or was it an entire fleet? And can I please have exact detail of what the new registration numbers were? No. I want to ask that there weren't just suddenly vanity plates put on cars, and that they actually were changed for real security reasons. Thank you.
I think, comrades,
it might be that the budget to pay for the license plate was 100,000 and the cost became 103. That's why you have 3,000 and over extended, over and above whatever was in the budget. So it's not like you only have 3,000 to pay for two cars or three cars or four cars. But I suppose they can talk to all the issues that members have.
Just Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, I've got my colleague here, the CFO next to me, who can add. We will, indeed, Honorable Chair has requested provide a detailed breakdown. We'll work on that immediately on all the questions that have been asked. These numbers have been audited, so it won't be difficult for us to provide a breakdown because they are available. The Honorable Chair is correct. So the top compensation is okay, salaries. That's how it is classified, and other goods and services we include such things as legal fees, travel and accommodation, S&T, and so on, and we'll provide the details of that as well. Legal fees, for example, because we are seeing a trend, there's an increase in litigation where there's various groups of people who are, you know, lodging a case against the president or the president. We've noticed a trend, so we're beginning to plan for that. Much better now than we did before, because the trend has been established. On car licenses, we'll provide that, including on which is the information is available. So we'll give details on that. And on the question of whether, you know, are we able to plan or we're failing to plan, better, I think we are able to plan. To plan better. Yes, there are things that we unforeseen, like couldn't have foreseen that we must play a mediation role if there's a problem in a particular country. But on, as I made an example of legal fees, just by looking at the trend line, we are now able to budget for legal fees, because we understand that there's a lot more South Africans who are taking either this or that case against the, I mean, there's a group of South Africans who want the Fox Act, so they've actually applied to court. And so as a result, we must now make provision to go to court and defend an issue of commercial applicants demanding a homeland. But we will give this itemized breakdown as requested. The CFO and
but where are we? I think there was a question that talked to if you look, we're two amounts from two different years. Are we going to call you again in 2 years' time for another set of expenditure, or will this be it?
Perhaps the CFO might answer it differently. I mean, this in the complex environment that we are in, if I said no, then it means we would have predicted that the suits would have occurred. And I wouldn't be in a position to do that, because to the extent that we've been saving, because we have been saving.
I think my question is between the last reported and authorized expenditure and today. Is there anything between since 2010,
no.
2011 to now? We're
saving, and we'll indicate that in the breakdown as we give.
Thank you, Chairperson. We did, in actual fact, in terms of the details on the services and traveling, we did submit the information, albeit that maybe it's not all that readable, in terms of the trip, what's represented, the flights, the accommodation, and so on and so forth. But if the other figures that the members want, we can still provide the details, those details, transactions. This was made in a letter that was written to National Treasury by our accounting officer in 2012.
Well, that is not
registered. Okay. venture that we will then set a part of the dirt plantation venture.
Okay. Right. Can we leave the president on the understanding that we've heard what the threat, but we want to see what the effect in terms of details. And then, oh yeah, and then the recommendation. I see that in the letter written in 2012, there's a recommendation there that the department should actually make sales. Start reading this English correctly. Says that in all these instances, the president should make savings to recover this unauthorized expedition. But we'll discuss and debate that amongst ourselves when we have to finally take a decision. So I just wanted to.
But maybe we should get guidance from. Let me not say guidance. What is the view of National Treasury on that? What is their advice? So that when we discuss it, at least we do have the advice. Because I think Honorable Boy was correct. If you read this, there are two recommendations that they are coming up with. Maybe they should just indicate the direction that they suggest that we should take.
If I can just, at this point,
Chairman, if you read the letter dated 14th May from Andrew Donaldson, it refers to taking it in the 2012-13 appropriation. That's long since passed. And then in Andrew's letter dated the 9th of September, there's no recommendation. So right now, we don't have a recommendation really, and we need clarity on that. And then, Mr. Chairman, the other thing is that why Andrew had put the middle paragraph in his 2012 letter, I'm not quite sure, because he states out of the blue that SCOPA decision had not yet been implemented. So are we, the National Treasury, asking us to make a decision about that and not try to explain it? And I think perhaps Honourable Boy was raising that when he was talking about 270.
Still on the recommendation. Yeah.
I just wanted clarity further on this, because the verbal recommendation that we received earlier on was that no additional funding was made available to the president. So then the letter said something else.
What was the verbal recommendation?
She said she recommends that additional funds be made available. Okay. So my question then, Chair, is can we just get one recommendation or a series of, maybe a buffet in a series of, you know, what is that is there. But right now, seeing a conflict. In fact, I'm finding this whole exercise, this particular issue, to be very vague.
Okay, come on.
No, Chair. As I said, I just wanted to add one point, is to say the system that are in place, the treasurer, are able to assist us. So when we debate the issue, come to a conclusion. We do hear what the acting DG says. He says we didn't have to see to tomorrow. And then it doesn't. But I mean, mediation is mediation. The principle is that what do you do when there's a need for mediation? I mean, what principles, what guides that? That's all I want to have a sense that if you are not entering an environment where it's being expected that up and down, and then you'll come back to us and say there was an unauthorized expenditure because car has happened. You see, it can't be like that. At least there should be something that says within the African continent, they're going to deal with this up and down. You see, within the African continent, they're going to be faced with this type of challenges. I mean, Botswana can happen tomorrow. Are you going to say to us, no, be comfortable because this thing will happen again tomorrow? I don't think one run government in that particular way. Is there something that is a guide that treasurers offer to the presidency to help them out of this environment? You see? It's kind of like disaster management, you know, disaster management. These two things are too different. And something must be said to us that there is a guide.
No, that's fine. And luckily, the ACTG has said since 2010, 2011 until today, I think they've identified the trend. So there's no unauthorized expenditure. They've managed
Yes, Congress.
Thank you, Chairperson. When they provide the detail, if I may request, especially where the goods and services are concerned, because they seem to want to justify traveler subsistence under goods and services. So for the implicated financial years of those goods and services, can they also provide the detail of travel and subsistence or subsistence and travel to see how much, what was budgeted, how much was spent?
Right. How much was budgeted and how much was spent? So I will see. All right. Any responses?
Myself will provide the details requested by the honourable members.
All right. We the response from Treasurer.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable. Thank you for the questions. We have looked at the presidency's baseline 2 years ago in 2012. And what we've done is that we've adjusted their baseline with small amounts. And that adjustment will grow at the rate of inflation. So it seems that since 2 years ago, the presidency is able to actually manage the expenses with the allocated budget. That's what we've done. We don't want to create a structure where money is allocated to the presidency without a specific purpose. So we don't want to create a contingency reserve like a slush fund. So we want presidency to plan and we want to allocate a budget according to specific purposes as to how they're going to spend that money. And I think we got it right. Since 2 years ago, the presidency are able to actually spend within the allocated budget. I think just to make it clear, the final recommendation of the Treasury is that the unauthorized expenditure should be funded from the National Revenue Fund. And what we said is that we will look at unspent funds from other departments to allocate that additional amount to the presidency. Because we are not sure that the presidency will be able to actually fund the unauthorized expenditure. So our recommendation is that the unauthorized expenditure should be funded from the National Revenue Fund. That's our final recommendation. And we will, as a mechanism to fund it, we will look at unspent funds from other departments and roll it over to the presidency. That is what the final is saying from Mr. Donaldson. Okay.
Yeah, I think let's
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry if it's not saying this. Andrew's letter dated 2013 does not say that. Has Gillian, have you read his letters? You're not responding to my question about this other 2008-09 waste expenditure, which was a decision made by SCOBA. And not, you're saying take it from the National Revenue Fund, but in which budget year? The current budget year? Yeah, that's similar. We really need this analysis, is what I asked for in the beginning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I can actually make it more clear to provide the committee within another letter. But I think we can only fund the unauthorized expenditure if there's a specific decision made by this committee. So we cannot say which year. So as soon as the committee approves the unauthorized expenditure, we will be able to fund it. But we cannot say which year, up to a point where the committee decided that this is what the committee wants to recommend as a final recommendation.
You see, there's a process point. We are now dealing with a matter now in front of us. And in that process, redemption, Treasury must provide solutions so that when we get outside here, when we have left, we are guaranteed in our discussion amongst ourselves by the solution that you have provided. You see. So your letter must be able to give us that satisfaction that this is what is going to happen. You see, that's where we get a little bit confused. So it's about the process. When it came to SCOPA, but the understanding is quite clear. There is an unauthorized expenditure, and Treasury has got some solutions, and then when we debate, either guided by Treasury or take it to that decision. It's how we wanted you to be able to guide us. That's why it's important for us that you become specific. So you don't want to cover the money from the national revenue, so that when you take a broader picture, the process points have been clarified to us. So your letter is quite essential and very clear to us that what does treasury say. That's why it seems like treasury itself, those that are designated to handle particular matters in relation to this department, in relation to that department, the ones that come in front of us. So we do need something more concrete from you to say exactly what are you seeing.
Okay, finally, Sam.
I will take it because there are two letters. That now the third letter is en route to the committee, which will better explain now, but I will tell the final recommendation. And if in that letter, could you please give an explanation or some sort of reasoning in terms of the other outstanding matters that one of the letters referred to, so that we can settle this matter also, not in piecemeal, because I would imagine that it doesn't serve us any good to be having a discussion on letters which Treasury has quote-unquote deemed outdated. So can we please get an all-encompassing communication from Treasury which will answer all these questions and what would be their final recommendation?
I think, comrades, the letter of the 9th of September was supposed to give a breakdown, because if you look at the letter of the 12th of August 2012, it merely gave us figures, trade 28, 8.4 million and 14.5 million. Then the subsequent letter was saying this is how this amount were incurred. But if you read the first letter, the last paragraph, it's very explicit in terms of what you think needs to happen, except that it made the recommendation tying it to time frames, meaning that if this committee had processed this letter beginning of 2013 or late 2012, then this letter would have been relevant in that sense. But the principle is that it must be funded from rollovers. That is the underlying principle that is in the letter. Take off the years and everything, that is right what it says. So, on that score, I'm not sure whether we need to include a third letter. What we need to do is to be able to decide ourselves whether this is what we want or want to recommend something else, after getting the additional information that the department must give to us. Then we can be able to then decide whether we think it must be funded for all of us or we think something else. I think many times, because I thought it was confusing too.
Well, you see, there's a line that says the Treasury advises that the balance of funds required should be recovered from 2012 appropriation for the President's vote. What does that imply? Doesn't it mean something else? And what I'm really appealing for, Sir Pastor, is really one line that explains where people. I understand the explanation, it's a bit intellectually sound explanation, but just give us an opportunity to get a letter from them.
Alright, so we'll get a third letter, okay? That's and then we sort it out. Okay, and then can we, Elliot, by end of this week, acting DG, is it possible by the end of this week we have all the chair information?
Yes, Honorable Chair, you get it. So the information is there, so we'll package it for us.
Yes. Send it to Mr. Ben here, yes, and then we'll make it available to all members so that we can process it. Thanks very much. May we go to Home Affairs?
Thank you.
having a hard time when our time is up on this earth. They are the last department we should leave to. When you come into this world, you first look at home affairs. When you depart, you go and report at home affairs. So that my time is up, I'm leaving. All right. Thank you, Gigi. Like I said at the beginning, our intent is really to fight against this matter. To as far as possible ensure that these are minimized. I don't want to be eliminated, but ideally eliminated. Rural expenditure, regular expenditure, product and wasteful expenditure. Maybe let me hand back to National Treasury so we deal with home affairs. And then we'll be done for the day.
Chairperson, I will try to be as clear as I can, honorable members. This is a complicated, difficult, unauthorized expenditure, but I will try to explain it the way we understand it. And I'm glad the department is here so that they can provide more detailed information. I think with this presentation, I want to go back to the definition in the PMA of unauthorized expenditure. I think it's important. Because in this unauthorized expenditure, it's over 2 years, 10-11, and then 12-13 that we are presenting to the committee. Just to go back to the definition of unauthorized expenditure, according to Chapter 1 of the PMA, unauthorized expenditure can defined as over expenditure of a vote or main division within the vote. So it can be the total vote or per program or segment or specifically appropriated amount. And the second instance of authorized expenditure is where expenditure occur not in accordance with the purpose of a vote. In the case of a main division or in accordance with the purpose of the main division. That's the definition out of the PMA. So it can either be over expenditure or it can be expenditure not within the purpose of the vote or main divisions of the vote. And I think with the home affairs, the authorized expenditure, you have both examples coming out. And then I also maybe want to alert the committee to what the PMA say in terms of authorizing unauthorized expenditure, condoning unauthorized expenditure. According to Section 34 of the PMA, unauthorized expenditure does not become a charge against the National Revenue Fund, except that, if the expenditure is an old expenditure of a vote, and the Parliament or a provincial legislature, as may be appropriate, approves the unauthorized expenditure as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. And I think this is a process that we are all busy with. And then let me come then to the authorized expenditure specifically relating to the department. So we're dealing with an authorized expenditure of 2010 and 11. And the department gave us a very high level breakdown of that authorized expenditure. The total amount is 687 million for that year. And I will shortly give you the breakdown of what was communicated to us. And I think we did request the department to give us more detailed information as to when it happened and how it happened. But they didn't provide us with that detailed information. And I think I'm sure they are here to provide you with that additional or detailed information. The one is the...
I'm very sorry to interrupt you, but the documents I have in front of me deal with expenditure in the 2005 to 2006 year.
Oh, okay. I didn't prepare anything on those because I think those are those were fine.
Let's allow her to present, and then we'll engage. Because indeed, right, that is what I have.
Okay, so I'm giving you the detail of the order of screenshot 2019-11. The one is the debt owing to Fever 3, ATK and consultant. That was the consultancy that was responsible for the turnaround project within the department. The amount is 59.7 million. The second one is the legal fees for litigation against the department. That is for 12 million. The third one is security services for 7.4 million. There is one IT-related contractual commitments by the department of 31.4 million. Then there was debt owing for leases for office accommodation of 45.5 million. Then shortfall on the cost for the printing of passports.
Sorry, we regret to interrupt. Could we pause just for a moment so we can actually find ourselves? Because we don't have that document.
one that she's talking to, this one, signed the 6th of May 2014. Yeah, this is the one that we do not have, which we get only now. Comrades, let's can we may we decide on how we move forward.
Okay.
Here is a copy. To what page? One page. I'm trying to look at our time. What is our time now? 20 past 12. I can't read the thing. Please, this one. I don't know who's watched this. Yeah. And I wonder how the owner sees the time.
We've had a lot of discussion about detail this morning, and it's actually a one-page document, and it doesn't have a detail. Is it worth even considering?
It is worth something. I think the point is, we can still have a discussion, because they can talk to the teachers and can ask them. Then they will then send physical details. As we have gone through, you know, a discussion. Can we break for 10 minutes? And then, is it 20 past 11 or 12? 7? Okay, can we convene the tapas, and whoever owns this watch, can you come and take it? Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairperson, we're not dealing with 2005-06 financial year, we're dealing with the one that just wants to sit now, 2010-11.
Yeah.
But they're all on the same time.
Yeah, no. We'll be dealing with this. I think we'll try and check with the Department of National Treasury, because the DG is saying that the earlier ones,
it comes from the committee, but what we need to check whether indeed they were part of the final year, because like I said, what we understood was that it was defense and correctional center. And right now, we're going to be dealing with it. Thank you for that. Yes, Mr. Treasurer, we can now proceed.
Chairperson, there are house rule 2011 and 12-13.
Yes.
Just
for the 10-11. You go through the board. Yeah, we deal with them both. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure where I stopped, but I was trying to give a breakdown, a high-level breakdown of the 2010-11 quarter expenditure. I will just go through it again. The total amount is 687.3 million. $687.3 million.
Okay.
That is for the 2010-11 financial year. So I'm going through the breakdown again now. That is for it's owing to Fever Tree IC Kearney Consultant. That was the consultancy responsible for the turnaround project within the department. That was for 79.7 million. And the second one was for legal services for litigation fees against the department. That was for 12 million. And then the third one was security services. That was for 7.4 million. And then the fourth one was for IT related contractual commitments, debt owing by the department, 31.4 million. And then debt owing for leases, that's for office accommodation, for 45.5 million. And then shortfall on the cost for printing of passwords amount owing to government printing works, 160.7 million. Under ID infrastructure, ID related contractual commitments.
Sorry, Mr. President, for being distracted. Unfortunately, we do not have what you have written on the document that you have written. So can you go on slowly, because we're trying to optimize as I'm presenting. We don't have this, and we are going so fast. Can you start fresh so that we can write as you are speaking? Thanks.
Okay, apologies. I will try to go on slower.
I don't know, Chair. I do have a little bit of different condition. I did got your explanation earlier to say that let's look at this letter. And when the member or officer on that side is now beginning to call figures, they get more and more complicated. We're not quite egregious. So the thing that we wanted to encourage, can't you read the such a disaster for you to postpone this one, so that you get all the recording properly done. But it did, you know, they are holding big figures that we're dealing with the fiscal system. We need to make a political decision. I understand programming will be a problem, but we are faced with the problem that these breakdowns are not in front of us. And you want us to make an informed decision. Help us in the crisis that we're going to face with.
Thank you, Chairperson. I silently had said that even before we were provided with this one page, but I just didn't want to come across as destructive. I think it would help us all that we postpone, and I think here we are dealing with even bigger amounts than we dealt with the other two departments. So I think it would help us to get it before, study it, understand, so that when we come here, the engagement is fruitful. At the moment, I don't think it is.
Yeah, well, I complete the work now and kick up.
Chairperson, I really raise my hand to say that I think it will do all of us justice, and the department and treasury and ourselves
we're not fighting anybody. It's just a matter of doing this properly. And it's in the interest of doing our job. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to me, the only department that actually came here with details was trade and industry. And we allowed the residents without the details to go on with their presentation. So I'm just suggesting, because they still have to come back and give us the details. I'm just suggesting that since they're here and she's giving us that summary of a detail, can go through that so that when they come back, they know exactly what they need to prepare for us. So that's like the presidency area on.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, unfortunately, I'm not going to support my comment on this one. I'm torn between the two comments. But my proposal would be, I support the proposal that suggests that we postpone. But then we need to agree that let's use the same resolution that applied in the previous one, when we are requesting National Treasury and the Department to provide us with detailed that is breakdown. So that in the next meeting, then we do have information. Because I agree with the colleagues. It is problematic that is for National Treasury to proceed, because some of us we are trying to follow, and unfortunately it's very difficult. Please, Chair.
Chair, thank you. Chair, I agree with my colleagues are saying, and I'm not commenting on that, but what I'm commenting is going forward, Chair. We've now had this problem for a second time. And I think that we need to give the departments and Auditor General who come to us a full briefing of what we expect at these hearings, at these meetings. That we expect, I would say first of all, and I'm taking guidance from some of my colleagues behind here, first of all, the author of a report should be present, so they know. Secondly, if you're going to discuss or speak on a particular document at the meeting, that document is in front of the committee members. And then finally, all departments are briefed to bring absolutely everything they can in support of their application for approval. Everything. So we don't say, please go back, please go back, please go back, please go back. Come one time. We are, you know as well as we all do, Chair, we have a very busy schedule to work. We've got 2 days to sort this out. Next week we're back into our prioritization groups. And we don't have time. And we can't afford departments coming here unprepared. Now, I'm going to be generous and say it's not the department's fault. But maybe we should give a full briefing to them of exactly what we expect. Maybe even set out, and once again I'm taking some good advice here, maybe even a template of how we want things set out. I think that could be very useful going forward. Thank you, Chair.
No, not on this one. I'm not willing to join you. We are very clear. We've been very clear from the start. Everybody knows that, even the officials are reading what PFMA is saying. So they do know what is supposed to be done. You can't say that parliamentarians don't know their job. What they are trying to say is that you don't know what it came for. It's been for months and months that you've been trying to do. No, you have your chance. Don't share yourself. You see, so what we are saying is that it's a huge amount. It's a big one. You need to be able to know that what we are dealing with here. We are dealing with the money of the poor. It's a big cost. I mean, we can't be global into just agree. We, for a matter of fact, we said we are starting this term on the basis that we want to make sure that there's no unauthorized expenditures. But we don't want to come into a rush form of decisions. And so we are continuously being patient to say, give us the facts so that we do know what we are asking. We're very clear. We are a collective, we are members of parliament. But at the end of the day, people will be shouting from outside and say, my party thinks this, my party thinks that. And it becomes a political war. And when you go into parliament, it becomes a totally different report game. But you need to be able to deal with facts. And this is where we want to come from. And there's no other way that we could allow ourselves to be pushed into a situation where we are close to something that is not clear to everybody. One is for our own benefit, two for the benefit of our own citizenship, so that when we deal with the property, they understand why we are saying that this unauthorized expenditure should be condoned. But if that fact is not here, there's no relevance for any politician to talk louder than any other person here. So then it means that we are agreeing that the officials of this country must be abused. It's on those basis that we are continuously persuading the chiefs and persuading departments to understand our own point of view. It must benefit all of us. And there's no way we can allow ourselves to be used as if we don't understand what we do understand the people, we do understand. And I mean, by the time he came in here, he gave us workshops on unauthorized expenditures. And all. That was the workshop, but we're dealing with figures today. And figures are very much important to the work that we're doing.
Alright, okay. Can we, yeah, I think let's just agree on one thing, otherwise we'll end up, yeah, can we agree to DG to meet next week Wednesday? I'm aware that next week Wednesday is close, but if we start at 9, I'm sure by 10, after 10 we should be done, and we can then go back to our groups and continue with our work.
So, Madam Chair, no, we accept that, but the issue on the 19th is a cabinet meeting, and Home Affairs will be presenting about the management agency in that meeting. But it will be here in Cape Town, but it's that in the morning, so I don't know whether it will be committed, because normally it finishes at by 1 o'clock, but just that one will stand by and not know at what point which would be caught in hold. But what we can do, Chair, is that as I understand the committee, also we can prepare the report and then we submit to the committee and the department can come. Then for me, I will also come and maybe I can come to the committee at the time I'm
called. Who can we have? The CFO and the DDG?
Yes. But myself will also be around. But what would be important for us that I accept the issue that let's prepare a report so that we can submit it. For the amount, it looks like big, but if there is no background on it, it can have an issue for us.
Can we agree on Wednesday, COVID? 9, the CFO, the DG will be here. The DG might not be around, but it's fine as long as because okay. One, two, can I just finish? And also, from Little Treasury, I'm reading all these two letters. There's no recommendation. It is highly summarized. Because when information comes to National Treasury, you get the details. So when you send to us, just like the other ones, there's to be some bit of meat, something that when you read, you can have some idea of. So if we can be able to get some level of detail, your own understanding of National Treasury, but fine, we'll analyze this thing. This is what we think. I think that will be it. Then the department will provide all the necessary details, and then we can then wrap it up. So would we be fine with National Treasury? All right. Let's say then, DG. I think you would have noted the trend. We would want the breakdown of the figures that give us that composite huge figure. This is what happened. This is what happened. All the figures that add up to all those amounts. Alright.
Yes, if Home Affairs have come this morning, our plenary sitting that afternoon only starts at 3, so maybe we can see them at 1 o'clock after our group sessions, if the morning becomes a problem. Just a suggestion, Chair.
In case. Thank you. Right. Yeah.
I just want to add that prior to meeting,
Can we get them before Wednesday? All right.
By Monday, we'll send it.
By when?
By Monday, we'll
send it. We'll send it. So members will have them Monday late, Tuesday, then can go through them. All right. But I'm sorry about that. Unless it comes back as an authorized expenditure. Remember, committee, we came to your meeting and we had to go back and come back. I think let us have a conversation ourselves and the department just to verify those previous figures so that we understand where we are starting from. All right. Thank you very much. The National Treasury and the Department, I really am sorry that we would like to cut it.
fair for you to have been here. And comrades, want to thank you very much, and our visitors from Buffalo City. I don't know why it's called Buffalo City. And City of Johannesburg. Welcome you. Happy to have you here. Can you call it quits? Is there any issue?
Yes. Tomorrow we're dealing with a similar process. Yeah. Could I please humbly request that a follow-up is done now, that the department come out tomorrow? No, exactly. So we don't have a situation. If you're not prepared, must have another page tomorrow. Please.
All right. Okay, that's fine. Let's meet tomorrow then.
Thank you.